This is One Man's Family. One Man's Family is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of the younger generation and to their bewildering offspring. Today, transcribed, we present Chapter 11, Book 72, entitled Clifford Defies the Lightning. It is Saturday afternoon at Seacliff in San Francisco. The Barber home, mellowed by the years, is etched sharp against a blue sky. The sun is shining, but occasional angry gusts of wind lash the branches of the trees up against the house. The sun is without warmth. The dark days of winter are at hand. If one is in the mood to be lonely, this is the day for it. In his studio at the top of the house, Paul Barber sits alone, staring out onto the slate-colored, restless bay.
Come in, come in.
Hello, Paul. It's Joan.
Why, Joan, I'm so glad to see you.
I was out taking a walk, and I saw your car out in front, so I came up to see you for a minute.
A minute? You'll stay longer than that, I hope. Here, let me take your coat.
Oh, that's okay. I'll just throw it over here.
I just can't tell you how good it is to see you again. You've been neglecting me, young lady.
Well, you know how it is with school and darned old homework and all that stuff.
Sure, I know.
How's my old room?
Oh, just as you left it this summer. Take a look if you'd like.
Yeah, I always like to say hello to it whenever I do get up here. I sure miss being here with you, Paul.
Well, you see, nothing's changed.
Uh-huh. You still have the picture of Ken took of you and me out at the airport, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. You think I'd take it down?
No. I'm just glad it's there, that's all.
I see Ken now and then out at the field. Tells me you haven't seen much of each other since school started.
Not much, no. I had a lot of work to do when school opened, and now that Nikki's gone, and I kind of hate to leave Claudia. She's missing him something awful.
She would, of course. You feel a little strange toward me today, don't you?
Well, I...
You know how I can tell?
No.
You haven't called me Uncle Paul since you arrived. Did you know that?
I hadn't realized it.
Why, do you suppose? Think it's because we've seen so little of one another the past couple of months we feel a little awkward or embarrassed, maybe? That does happen to people. And we're people, so it could happen to us,
A little embarrassment, maybe, because, I don't know exactly how to say what I want to tell you.
Well, we used to get around that by just plunging into it. Why not try that?
Okay. It's about Mr. Frome's sister, Mrs. Abbott.
Yes?
Well, when I first heard about your going out with her, you won't think this is silly, will you, Uncle Paul?
Have I ever thought anything you said was silly?
No.
Then go ahead. When you first heard about my going out, what?
I guess I was a little jealous, and I kind of hated her.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a pretty understandable reaction. And?
Then when I heard Grandfather and everybody running her down and everything, I want you to be happy more than anything in the world, I think. And, well, if Mrs. Abbott is the one who'll make you happy, then if you love her, and I'm certainly going to love her, too. I don't think I've made myself very clear.
You made it very clear, Joan, darling. And I'll never forget what a generous and warm thing you've done in coming here and telling me this. Yes?
Cliff, Paul.
Oh, come in.
Well, say, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bust in on something.
Oh, hi, Cliff.
Oh, hiya, Joan.
Well, this is wonderful. Like old times, having people come up to my studio. This is a tonic for the old man at the top of the house.
Joan, we've got to get this fella out of talking that old man stuff. Your grandfather's been pounding that into him so much lately, I think he's got him half believing it. How come you're home this afternoon, Paul, no day?
No, not until tonight. Chris was having her hair done this afternoon. I was sitting up here all alone, and Joan came up and lifted my spirits. Now here you are, lifting them some more.
Gee, I hate to, but I have to go now, Uncle Paul.
Hey, you sure I'm not running you out?
Oh, no, Cliff. I was just getting ready to go when you came. Well, bye, Uncle Paul.
Here, let me help you with your coat.
We'll both help her. You take this side and I'll take that side.
Oh, such service. Thank you.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Bye, Cliff.
Bye, Jim.
Goodbye, honey. Thank you again for what you said.
Okay, Uncle Paul.
Well, she's getting positively beautiful. Is she going to wow him one of these days?
She came up here to tell me how she felt about Chris. Really touched me very much.
Oh, that's swell. Shows the whole family isn't against you anyway. I think I'll start a campaign, line up everybody who's on your side and make them sign loyalty pledges.
Now, I know you're kidding, Cliff, but that's just the thing I hate about this whole business. I can feel the family splitting over this affair. An alignment that It means a wrench to family understanding and unity. I don't want to be responsible for something like that. It's horrible.
You're not responsible for it. If Dad would only be reasonable, the whole thing would simmer down. He's getting more domineering every day, and it's about time somebody told him so, too.
Oh, forget him. Tell me, how's Roberta these days, huh? I've been so wrapped up in my own affairs, I haven't any idea how it goes with you and her.
Just well. And that reminds me of what I wanted to ask you about when I came up here. I have got a brilliant idea, Paul. I think it's brilliant anyway. Hope you do, too.
Well, let's hear it.
Well, how's about I making a foursome some night? You and Chris, Roberta, and I. Would you like that?
Would I? It'd be wonderful.
You think Chris would go for it? I've never met her, you know.
You'll be the first member of my family, Cliff, to meet her socially. I'm glad it's going to be you. She'll love you for it. And I love you for it. Oh, excuse me. Hello? Oh, hello, Dan. Hazel? Just a minute. Hey, Cliff, is Hazel downstairs, you know?
She wasn't when I came up.
Oh, I guess not, Dan. You tried Claudia's? Well, Hazel and Claudia have been seeing a lot of each other lately. Yeah.
Myself in.
Here I am, Hazel, in the sunroom.
I'm sorry I was so long getting over here.
Oh, it wasn't so important as all that. I probably shouldn't have phoned you. It's just that I've had a wonderful letter from Nicky and I wanted to talk about it. And not to a man, either.
Oh, how nice.
Here, let me take your things. Those are pretty gloves.
Aren't they? Dan brought them to me from that Los Angeles trip. My right size, too. Dan's wonderful that way. Remembers everybody's favorite colors and proper sizes and the date of everyone's birthday.
The Barber gals are very lucky, Hazel, aren't we?
Of course. I'm pretending to be angry right now, though.
Oh?
Well, not angry. I'm put out.
Oh, I see.
This hockey game enthusiasm's simply gone too far. Well, the men in my family are out of their minds about it. It's getting to be an every Saturday night excursion. They're even taking Margaret with them this evening. Honestly, I don't understand the fascination of it. Sitting in that chilly arena while those hulking grown men skate around after that little rubber gadget. It just seems silly to me. Well, let's hear the letter. Or is that what you wanted, to read it to me?
Mm-hmm. Nicky's homesick.
I'll bet he is.
He couldn't wait for Christmas. The airmail rained little packages today. Gifts for Penny and Joan and me. And then this afternoon, a special delivery. Just about the most thrilling letter I ever got in my life.
How wonderful, Claudia.
See, this chain? Isn't that the sweetest thing?
Oh, what lovely fragile gold threads.
Like little cobwebs, aren't they? That's what he sent me. And a ring for Penny and a box for Joan. She's appalled, I think. Oh, but best of all, this letter. Oh, Hazel, it swept over me this afternoon. What a lucky, lucky person I am. And how very much, how very, very deeply I love Nicky. This is what he wrote. My darling, I was in the gloomy old storage room of the Belfordshire house this evening, and I came across a box of trinkets which my great-great-grandmother had highly prized, because they were given to her by someone who loved her. A locket and chain, a tiny ring, and a silver bracelet. And standing there in that gloomy old room, I suddenly saw you in our lovely living room at Seacliff, and I longed to be there. Because I cannot come home quite yet, I'm sending these tokens of an old sweet love to the people who are dearest to me in all the world, to you and Joan and Penny. But, and I whisper this, Claudia, most of all to you. You are my heart and my life. Well, I guess I can't read it. I guess maybe I shouldn't.
Of course, darling.
It just... Oh, isn't this silly of me? Let's talk about something else for a minute. Oh, I'm sorry, Hazel.
You know what let's do? Let's phone Nicky on Christmas. All of us. We can put it in 2 or 3 days ahead.
Oh, wonderful. Why didn't I think of it? I'll write him tonight and ask him to tell us where we can reach him Christmas morning.
Claudia.
Oh, Joan. We're in the sun porch. There's a package for you, John, on the table in the hall. Bring it out here, will you? Do I look too tearful?
You look wonderful. You really do.
Hello, Hazel.
Hello there, Joan.
Notice where the package came from?
Mm-hmm.
London. It's from Nicky. Well, open it. Look. Look at my locket.
Hmm?
Oh, yeah, it's pretty.
Aunt Penny got a sweet little ring. They're things from a very old country house in England.
Claudia.
Joan, what's the matter?
Claudia, I'm glad you're here too, Hazel, because there's something I'd like to say to both of you.
Why, Joan?
I've just been with Uncle Paul, and the whole stinking thing just smells terrible, that's all.
Joan!
Everybody in this family, for as long as I can remember, have all run to Paul whenever we had any real trouble. Sure, we could all count on Paul. He'd take care of things. He'd solve things for us. And now, well, now everybody's let him down. We've all let him down, but good.
Now, Joan...
All those people have always depended on him. Not one has even made a decent, polite gesture towards Mrs. Abbott.
He didn't say this to you, did he?
Well, of course not. That's what worries me. He's so reserved, even with me. I tried to tell him how much I love him. I tried to let him know I wish somebody would have invited Christine Abbott over for tea or something. Oh, darn it. Do you know what I think of my grandfather? What I really think of him in my heart? I think he's the stuffiest, meanest, most tyrannical...
Joan, please.
Well, I do. He doesn't even know Mrs. Abbott. But in that stubborn, pig-headed...
Joan!
I said pig-headed. In that pig-headed way of his, he's got the whole family on its ear against Paul.
Joan, I don't think you understand everything.
I understand enough to know that Christine Abbott must be a nice person, or Uncle Paul wouldn't be in love with her. How does it look to her, do you suppose? All of us sitting here back of our doors and windows, smug and snug and satisfied and silent... It's just a doggone dirty trick, that's all, that somebody hasn't made at least a gesture in all this time. Well, I'll tell you something, Claudia. If you don't ask her over, then I will. I'll take her out to a restaurant if I have to. And I'll tell her why, too. I'll tell her my whole family is stuck up and afraid of Grandfather Barber. And I'll tell her he's just a stuffy, pig-headed old man.
Now, Joan, come back here.
Oh, what's the use? You don't any of you really care about Uncle Paul. You just think about yourselves all the time.
Oh, dear.
I can't possibly do anything about Rex Sprome's sister. You see that, don't you?
No, of course you can't.
I haven't talked to Rex since he got back. I don't even want to see him. I can't, Hazel. He was too attractive to me once. And I love Nicky, and... I just can't do it.
I could do something about her, I suppose, but...
But what?
Well, I've never seen Father so completely belligerent about anybody.
Know why? That's because he senses that Paul's really in love this time. Why was Mom ill the other night? Because she knows, too. Have you noticed she doesn't hear very well? Have you noticed that lately?
Oh, yes.
Well, I have, too. And I'm perfectly sure it's what the doctors call psychosomatic. She doesn't want to hear. She can't bear to hear everything because somebody's going to come in one of these days and say that Paul's married. And there goes her boy.
Oh, no.
Well, where do you think this is leading, then, Hazel? To a dinner date in the movies? It's leading right to a wedding and nowhere else. And what do you think that's going to do to this family? Is it going to be a question of taking sides?
I hadn't thought it through that far.
Well, I have. And I can't do anything. I'm not going to see Rex Frome or his sister and jeopardize my life with Nicky. Not even for Paul.
And at Jack Barber's house on this same Saturday afternoon...
And then Whimsy Mouse sat back and stroked his whiskers. He was very old and very wise. Squeak, squeak, said Whimsy, but Mrs. Whimsy didn't answer. Squeak, squeak, he said again, and with that, Mrs. Whimsy ran right away from him across the room. Her little feet went pat, 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 pat across the floor, and down she went into a tiny hole, and down she went into a tiny hole in the wall, which... Mary Lou? Mary Lou? You asleep, honey? Huh. At last.
Jack.
Shh. She's asleep. Wait till I get out.
That's the last one.
Wait till I close the door. There. What were you saying, Betty?
I say we've got them all down for the afternoon, and I hope they'll take nice long naps.
I thought Mary Lou would never go to sleep. I read that silly Whimsy Mouse through 6 times, and down she went into a tiny hole. I hope she gets down there and gets stuck and never comes out.
Shame on you. Your daughters would be lost without Whimsy Mouse. They love her.
I wish they'd take up Peter Rabbit again. I thought I was sick of him, but he's nothing compared to that persnickety mouse. Squeak, squeak.
Come on, let's get on downstairs.
Well, anyway, you'll have to read it to her tonight.
All right.
No sooner get home on a Saturday afternoon off than I get stuck with Whimsy Mouse.
Well, you can go right over there on the Davenport and stretch out. The house is quiet and you can rest.
Okay. Oh, boy. Practically everybody I know goes out and plays golf Saturday afternoon.
Six daughters make a difference, you know.
I'll say it makes a difference.
Anyhow, Jack, do I insist on you coming home every Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, I know, but with Nicolette away.
Poor Nicolette. Doggone Paul, anyway. It's a darn shame the way he's taken up with that Mrs. Abbott when there's a wonderful girl like Nicolette around.
Yep, too bad.
Supposing Mrs. Abbott is beautiful. What she got, Nicolette hasn't got. Nicolette's not only a darn good-looking person, she's downright stunning.
Anybody arguing?
Okay, so she's not as startling as Mrs. Abbott. But that isn't what you want in a marriage. What you want there is character.
Yeah, sure.
So we don't know this Mrs. Abbott, but she is a sister to Rex Frome, and we know what a despicable man he is. I mean, the terrible way he tried to carry on with Claudia up there in Montana summer before last. Don't you think so? Jack?
Hmm?
Jack, are you going to sleep?
No. I was listening, Betty.
Well, you don't seem to be very interested.
Oh, sure I am. Say, what time's Mom coming over? I thought you told me she was going to be here this afternoon to give you a hand.
Well, after I found out you were going to be home, I told her not to hurry.
Oh.
I asked her to stay for dinner. She comes over all the time to help, and we hardly ever ask her to stay and eat with us.
Sure, that's swell. Oh, there she is now, I guess. Come on in.
Not so loud, Jack. You wake the children. Oh, hello, Hazel.
Oh, hi, Hazel.
I'm on my way home and just stopping by for a minute. No, don't get up, Jack. You look too comfortable.
We just got the children settled, and they're having a little breathing spell.
I've been over at Claudia's. I'm really gadding about today.
What's she hear from Nicky?
He's getting terribly homesick, I'm afraid.
Say anything about when he expected to get home?
No, I don't think he did. It'll be after Christmas anyway before he gets back. I do know that.
No,
what a shame. Please take off your things. You don't have to rush away.
No, I really can't stay. Dan will be home, and then I promised Father I'd see him later. He called me and said he wanted me to come over because he expected to be all alone. Mother was coming over here. He sounded so abused.
We tried to persuade him to have dinner with us, but he wouldn't come. Mother Barbara's going to eat with us, though.
Yes, I know.
Father Barbara hardly ever eats with us anymore. I think the children are beginning to get on his nerves.
Oh, Betty, Father loves the children.
Oh, sure, I know that. But he doesn't come over and play with the triplets nearly as much as he used to, does he, Jack?
Certainly hasn't been around much lately. Of course, when all six of them start talking and crying all at the same time, it does get a little confusing. I'd run to cover myself a lot of times if I could.
What's more, you'd do it. Don't think he doesn't, Hazel.
Well, anyway, I don't hold it against Dad if he doesn't feel like being around here up to his neck and kids. He's had children to contend with practically all his life. Can't blame him for wanting to get away from them once in a while.
Well, I finally got here.
Hi, Mother Barbara.
I'm sorry to be late. But it's getting so I have to have an argument with Henry every time I step out of the house. Oh, I didn't know you were here, Hazel. How are you, dear?
Just fine.
What's the matter with Dad? Didn't he want you to come over here?
Oh, he just wanted to fuss a little. If he's left alone for a second lately, he starts talking about the family deserting him. You know how he goes on about how we're never together anymore.
Yeah, we ought to all descend on him some evening and bring all the kids. Boy, would he yell for help.
Oh, poor Father. I think I'll go over and keep him company.
Oh, that'll be nice, Hazel. He's looking forward to seeing you. Well, I must say he misses Paul in the evenings.
Hardly anybody sees Paul anymore, I guess.
Oh, Jack, please. Let's not talk about it.
As I said, I'm going across the hedge. If Father feels lonesome, maybe I can do something about it. My Father, this is a cozy fire.
Yes.
It would have been very lonely at my house tonight if you hadn't called me.
I know all about loneliness, Hazel. It's lonely here. Daniel and Hank and Peaky scooped up Andy on the way to the hockey game, too, I understand.
Dan's going to make hockey fans of everybody or die trying.
Not my game.
Mine either. Father.
Yes?
Father, I was at Claudia's this afternoon, and we...
Claudia's heard from Nicholas?
Oh, yes. A wonderful letter. You may not hear it, though. It's a love letter.
Oh, splendid. It'll be in tune with the general atmosphere, Hazel, yes. Love is in the air around here. Living in this house, Hazel, living in this house is like living in the middle of a popular song.
I wanted to talk to you about that.
Huh? What's this? What about?
About Paul and Mrs. Abbott.
I do not discuss Mrs. Abbott.
But, Father...
A conversation is useless, Hazel. What can you say to a gray-haired, middle-aged man who suddenly becomes addled over a blonde widow we know nothing about?
But that's the point. We ought to know her.
Why? I met her brother. That's all I need to know about them.
But it isn't fair to Paul, is it, Father, for none of us to make so much as a friendly gesture toward Mrs. Abbott? If Paul...
I'll not discuss it, Hazel.
If Paul should marry her, don't you see...
If Paul should marry her, we would know for sure that he has suddenly become completely irresponsible. And friendly gestures now will do nothing to prevent the inevitable disaster. No, no, I'll not discuss it, Hazel. Ask Mrs. Kettleman if dinner's ready, and we'll go in.
All right, Father. But where's Cliff?
Oh, he's probably helping Paul to dress. Yes, lately he has taken to helping Paul put his clothes on. I don't know just why, but Paul is perhaps so bemused he'd go with his laces untied. He's never here anymore. My conversations with Paul are made up of hail and farewell. Yeah, now see about dinner, will you? I'm hungry tonight.
Something smells awful good around here.
Oh, come in, Clifford. Hazel's here.
Well, hi. I heard the hockey fans had abandoned you. How are you?
I'm fine, Cliff.
It's nice having to take Andy along. I didn't get a chance to thank Dan. Tell him I appreciate it, will you?
Oh, it's fun for all of them. Excuse me, Father's hungry. I'm going to see if I can hurry Mrs. Kettleman.
Just tell her Dad's hungry. That'll do it.
It's blowing a little tonight, eh?
Yeah, it is.
Yes, I love to see the firelight playing on the walls here. Is there a nicer room than this in the whole world, Clifford? Huh? Is there a cozier spot on the earth? I don't think so.
Dinner in about 10 minutes, Father.
Yes, I'll be able to hold out because I practice self-discipline. Sit down here.
Has Paul gone out yet?
Paul?
No, no. He looks pretty sharp in his new dark blue suit. Where do you see him? He looks 10 years younger.
Yes, and he acts the truth.
Seems happy. That's no crime, is it?
Happy? He goes about with a dazed smile on his face. I don't know whether it's happiness or bewitchment.
Oh, now, Dad, wait a minute.
I'll carry to my grave, Hazel. I'll carry to my grave the picture of him riding bareheaded in an open car with Mrs. What's-her-name on a cold, wintry afternoon, starry-eyed as a boy, with his white hair blowing in the wind.
You're riding him pretty hard, Dan.
I make no comment. That isn't the simple truth.
From your point of view?
I have a reasonably objective point of view, Clifford.
I don't think you have at all.
Oh, indeed. You disapprove of me. Is that what you are conveying, Clifford?
I think you're riding him too hard, and what's more, I don't think you realize that he doesn't really have to take it.
Why don't we postpone this debate until after dinner? Maybe you're both speaking out of hunger.
No, Hazel. If Clifford disapproves of me, and apparently he does, it's best to bring it right out in the open.
That's what I was doing. Now that we're down to it, you might as well know where I stand.
And just where do you stand?
Well, if we're going to draw up sides and have a good old family feud, and that's what it'll be if you go on riding in the way you have been.
Oh, you're siding with Paul, is that it?
I'm going to have to, Dad. I think you're 100% wrong.
Oh, indeed. You have met this woman, have you, Clifford? You are bemused by her, too?
No, Dad, I have not met her. If Paul loves her, that's enough for me.
I was telling Father earlier, Cliff, that I thought somebody in the family ought to make a gesture toward her for Paul's sake.
And we disposed of that, didn't we? Huh? We decided to drop that matter, did we not?
Well, I'm not going to drop it. I'll do something about it.
Oh, don't talk to me about it. I cannot abide those people. Let's not discuss it anymore.
You talk about it whenever you feel like it. Paul's gray hair, his age...
That will do, Clifford.
Hey, wait a minute.
Cliff.
Just a minute now, Dad. That will do, Clifford. Aren't we getting a little mature for that?
Huh?
That's what you used to say to me when I was about 14.
Well,
yeah, and when I wanted to present my point of view, that's what I used to get. That will do, Clifford. And I always knuckled under, didn't I? That's where I learned about knuckling under. That's probably the reason I'm where I am today, nowhere. Because I always saw the wisdom of saying, okay, Dad, have it your way.
Clifford, I don't know why you should walk in here and pick a quarrel with me. Your mother isn't coming home to dinner and Paul's going out. I rather thought that you and Hazel and I could have a nice time together.
Sure.
Well, you and I aren't going to have a nice time together as long as you're booting Paul around the way you are.
Very well, Clifford. If my attitude is in any way unsound, I'll appreciate having somebody put me straight. Yes, if there are any conceivable grounds on which Paul can be defended in this matter, it's only fair, I suppose, that I should consider them.
Well, I'm sorry for the poor guy.
So am I, Clifford. It's a regrettable thing in every way. There was an acquaintance of mine at the club. He was a middle-aged man, a businessman with gray hair, very successful.
Well, what's he got to do with it?
I'll get to it. Yes, he has had a nice home, loving family, two beautiful little children, and a prize-winning boxer dog. Well, sir, he suddenly took up with an addle-pated nincompoop of a secretary and began to walk about in a daze. Yes, yes, let his gray hair blow in the wind and allowed his business to go to rack and ruin, divorced his wife, abandoned his children, and in the end was asked to resign from the club. I suppose that he, too, had a defender somewhere, but I never happened to encounter him. It was a shocking, disastrous performance from beginning to end. Well, Clifford, why are you staring at me in that red-faced way?
But this isn't the same thing at all.
I don't see why not.
Careful, lower your voices. Mrs. Kettleman will hear you.
Same thing, exactly. The man's name was Tippett, Horace Tippett. Iron gray hair, made a complete fool of himself. Must have been 50 years old. Same thing, exactly.
Well, who's in here? Oh, hello there, Hazel.
Oh, hello, Paul. Well, that's a pretty tie. New top coat, too?
You like it?
Mm, very nice. Cliff, you're right. He does look younger.
Well, I'm on my way.
Have a nice time, Paul.
Thanks, Cliff. Where's Mom?
She's staying over at Jackson Petty. She's been there for several hours, Paul. Several hours.
I'll tell her good night for me when she comes home.
You have a new hat, too, I see.
No, it's the old one. I had it cleaned.
Yes, yes. Good. I'm very glad you decided to wear a hat.
Good night, Cliff. Hazel. Pat, good night. That was quite a blow out there tonight. Putting up a storm out here. Well, I'll see you.
Did you see the way he looked at me? White-faced and defiant. Did you see that?
Now, Father, please. I'll go see about dinner.
Well, you saw that, didn't you, Hazel? That bitter, cold look that he gave me?
Well, Dad, why wouldn't he? You're always making cracks about his gray hair and his age.
I didn't mention his gray hair. Now, did I, Hazel?
Oh, let's not. I'll be right back.
You talked about his hat. You ride him all the time. Is it a fixation, Dad? Can't you stop?
I'm going to bring him to his senses if it's the last thing I do. All dressed up to go out with the widow of a drunken band leader, the sister of a bumptious, neurotic, impossible young man.
He bought some new clothes. He needed new clothes. For years, he hasn't cared enough to get any. I should think you'd be...
You're just spoiling for a quarrel, aren't you, young man?
Look, Dad, I think it's about time Paul had some happiness, if he can find it. He's a lonely guy. His own personal life up to now amounts to nothing. For 20 years, he's been living in and for the family. Look at it, Dad. He had a little taste of personal happiness in France 30 years ago, a girl he really loved, and he lost her. And what's he done in the meantime? Got through some empty years the very best way he could. Well, if he's found someone else who excites him and interests him, then it's doggone selfish of all of us if we don't meet her and welcome her and bring her into the family. And believe me, you'll lose, Paul, if you don't.
Ah, that has the sound of a threat, Clifford.
It's obvious, isn't it? How can you take this stand, Dad, when you're wrong so often?
I'm wrong so
often. Time after time you've said Paul had no judgment about people, and then you end up eating crow. Well, I wouldn't do it this time if I were you. I'd get on the bandwagon a little earlier than usual. Because if Paul's in love with Christine Abbott, well, the way you're going on now, you'll lose him. Dad, you'll lose them both.
You are now advising me, are you, Clifford?
Now, somebody ought to. We're all just walking into an unholy mess of what's going on.
Oh, stuff and nonsense. This is a giddy, middle-aged man trying his wings for one last flight.
No, it is not. This is a very sound and sensible and admirable guy who knows what he wants and means to have it. Have you ever known Paul to be like this before? He loves Christine. I think he loves her enough to turn his back on all of us if he has to. Dad, this is it. I tell you, this is the time.
All right, very well. If it is very well, Clifford, he'll have to turn his back on us then. Because I'll have no traffic with those people whatever as long as I live.
You've just heard Chapter 11, Book 72 of One Man's Family. Written, produced, and transcribed under the direction of Carlton E. Morse. Chapter 12, entitled A Touch of Christmas Spirit, will come to you next week at this same time.
What's on NBC today? Phil Harris and Frankie Remley set out to buy a Christmas present for Alice Faye, and the hilarious results add up to good listening on the Harris Faye Show. And Sam Spade turns broken hearts counselor for an unhappy prize fighter during the Lonesome Louie caper. Radio entertainment at its best. Tune for the Harris Fay Show and Sam Spade today on NBC. One Man's Family came to you from California. Now stay tuned for the Quiz Kids on NBC.